Well, good morning. Hey, we got some energy here this morning. This is good. I want to draw your attention to two things before we jump into the sermon this morning. One is that coming up this Saturday, I think it's afternoon, we're the community of pastors and churches in the areas have brought in or are bringing in a mobile food pack for Feed My Starving Children. They did this last year, and it was a great opportunity for churches and people to come together and not only serve and get to know each other a little bit, but also to bless children and families in countries who right now, they don't have a lot. In fact, they don't have food even. And so that's one of the things as we're coming together and we're packing food is an opportunity to bless people in another country. And if I remember correctly, Feed My Starving Children also takes it as an opportunity to share the goodness of God with those that they're giving food to. So I did that last year, and I know some of the youth were with me and some of the other families. It was an awesome time, so I encourage you, if you can, be a part of that. You can go online and sign up, and it is going to be at the Assemblies Church again this year. Second thing I want to point out is if you are in a family and you have young kids, we have some cool things for you. If you want to do kind of a Bible reading stuff up through Christmas, you can find that at the Welcome Center as well if you're interested in that. And we have one for a family. What I want to do right now is I want to pray, and then we're going to jump right into the text this morning. Father, as we just sang, you are good. You love us. Your love endures forever, and that you are with us. And so, Father, as we enter into just hearing from you this morning, Father, I pray that you would be with us and reminding us of your love, reminding us that you're with us even as we're looking to invest into others' lives. And so, Father, I just pray that you would guide us, help us to hear from you, and most of all, be reminded and point others to you. We pray in your name. Amen. Okay, Boomer. In the past few weeks, this phrase, and I have to point out, it's been growing in popularity this past year with Gen Z. This phrase just made it into national news. In fact, it's here in this past November. And it started with a video of an older man making a statement like this. Millennials and Gen Z have the Peter Pan syndrome. They don't ever want to grow up. They think that the utopian ideals that they have in their youth are somehow going to translate into adulthood. To which Gen Z and millennials respond with the simple and dismissive reply, "Okay, boomer." Now, understand, this phrase has tapped into a vein of frustration amongst Gen Z, and it has found its way to T-shirts. It's popping up in videos all over the place. It's even made it into songs and more. It was recorded that as of early November of this year, on the social media app TikTok, it's been viewed more than 44.6 million times alone. So the question is, what's fueling this resentment? What's fueling this issue? Now, according to the New York Times, they said it's this. It's the rising inequality, the unaffordable college tuition, the political polarization that's been encouraged by the internet, and the climate crisis that are all fueling this anti-boomer sentiment. However, if you listen close to the voices of the teens and young adults who are embracing this phrase, the feelings and beliefs kind of boil down to something like this. You don't get the reality of the world we're experiencing. You aren't listening, and you're unwilling to change. Now, the crazy reality is a little bit like this. Those same beliefs, frustrations, comments, and assumptions that are being made towards millennials, they're also mirrored in the older generations. And it goes a little bit like this. They're looking at the younger generations and say, "You don't understand the way that the world works. In fact, you're unwilling to listen to us. And you're unwilling to change to live in the way that the world currently is now." Now, the end result is actually frustration, hurtful comments, hurt on both sides as they go to war with each other over who should have the right to decide how things work and how the world is supposed to be. the current relationship between generations is marked by a lot of talking at each other and very little talking with each other. And the relationship has kind of gotten to the place where neither side loves, trusts, or understands the world of the other. So with a cry of, okay, boomer, Gen Z is beginning to march off, determined to change the world on their own, apart from anybody else. And yet, as we turn to God's heart for this world, and God's heart for our relationships with each other across generations as a church, the question we have to ask is this really the reality that God wants for us? Now, this morning we're continuing on in our ongoing sermon series, and we've been unpacking the direction that we want to be pursuing as followers of Jesus and as Grand Rapids Evangelical Free Church. And so if you're joining us for the first time this morning, or you've been away for a bit, you'll find the vision that we're aiming towards printed on the front of your bulletins, and you'll also find it up on the screen. This is what we want to be about. We want to be a church that is together, living with purpose by building a community that loves everyone deeply, and by developing personal relationships that lead others closer to Jesus, and by equipping each generation to follow Jesus and become disciple makers. Now, today we're going to do some digging and unpacking on that last bullet point, the equipping each generation to follow Jesus and become disciple makers. But there's something really important that we need to recognize and we need to point out. See, as we'll see this morning, this last bullet point isn't just one of 3 points that are independent of each other. Like maybe you would find on a grocery list, like get milk, get cereal, get... We're not talking about that. In fact, in reality, it's really the application of the two previous points. So in other words, if we're building a community that loves everyone deeply, and we're developing personal relationships that lead others closer to Jesus, then that applies not only to us personally, but it applies across each generation that we come across, including within our church. See, and we're talking about not just a physical generation like boomers or Gen Z, but we're also talking about generations in a spiritual sense, ranging from those who just entered into a relationship with Jesus, who are a little bit like spiritual babies, to those who could be spiritual grandparents of multiple generations of investing and helping others develop and grow in a relationship with Jesus. And so at the very end of it all, or at the end of this goal is this, that all of us together would be following Jesus and becoming disciple makers. But here's the big question, right? Here's the question you might be asking. And it's what we're going to focus in on this morning. What does that look like? Like, what does it look like to equip each generation to follow Jesus and become disciple makers? We're going to start today by looking at what we mean by the word equipping. And then we're going to apply that to how we relate with one another as different generations within a church, and our church in particular. So let's jump in. And I want to give you a key truth to start off this morning. This is one of 2 really big key truths. Equipping isn't simply giving information. It is ongoing life-on-life coaching in application. Now, for our main text this morning, we're going to be returning to 1 Thessalonians 2, 7 and 8, and 11 and 12. And if you were with us a few weeks ago, Pastor Ken in his sermon, Close Enough to Love, also walked through these verses, unpacking the kinds of personal relationships and love that we need to lead others closer to Jesus. And I would encourage you, if you missed that, I would check it out online on our website at grefc.org under the Resources tab. But see, we're returning to it this morning because it's intimately connected with how we equip others, especially those who are younger in age and younger in spiritual maturity than us, to follow Jesus and become disciple makers. Now, if you have a Bible with you or a Bible app on your phone, I would encourage you to turn there with us this morning. It's 1 Thessalonians 2. We're going to start in verse 7. And you can also find it up on the screen. Now, here's what it says, and this is the Apostle Paul talking to the Thessalonian church that he's writing to. I'm talking about their relationship with him. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. And so being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. And jumping ahead, for you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Now, Paul, as he's looking to make disciples, as he's disciple-making, he willingly shares two things with the people in the Thessalonian church. He's sharing the gospel of God, and he's sharing his very self. So he gave them the truth of Jesus about him dying on the cross in our place for our utter rejection of God. And this was from us declaring our independence from God and taking on the right to decide for ourselves what is right and fair. And so we place ourselves first in our life. And the result is these broken and hurt relationships with God and with each other. And Paul gave them the truth that God not only paid for that sinfulness, those relationships, but he rose again to bring us into a new life and a new love relationship with himself, making us God's sons and God's daughters. And here's the crazy thing. What's more, through his love by the Holy Spirit, he enables us to love others selflessly and sacrificially. But here's the question we often ask. We talk about that, and then we kind of go like this. Isn't it enough to share this good news, this gospel of God with others? Or maybe to put it a little differently, did Paul sharing his life with the Thessalonians, did it really matter? Like, did it really make a difference? Here's the answer. Yeah. It absolutely did. It absolutely did. In fact, Paul's sharing himself with the Thessalonians was essential for them to catch the why and how a relationship with Jesus is really good news. And he's not just talking about for eternity, but he's talking about everyday, moment by moment life right now. So he went far beyond Paul just giving the information about the truth of who Jesus is into a deep personal and parent-like relationship where a love relationship with Jesus was being brought into and applied in every area of life. Now, think about it this way. Imagine that you signed up today to play hockey, right? You walk into practice. You walk in, it's your very first day, and the coach tells y'all, the whole team, sit down in the bleachers. And as you sit down, as you're there, he begins to unpack the truth of hockey, right? How hockey is played. How do you score a goal? How do ice skates work? Why is it important to know your team and work with your team? And he unpacks all of that. And at the end, practice is up, and the coach says, guess what? You know everything that you need to know to play hockey well. I've just told you everything you need to know. Your first tournament starts tomorrow at 8 a.m., I wish you well. I'm going to be there for you. I'm going to be in the stands cheering you on, and it's going to go great. Now, here's the question, right? Has that coach just equipped his team to play hockey? Now, maybe in the smallest sense that they have the foundational information that they might need to know about hockey. But there's a big difference between having the information and actually knowing how to apply it personally as you're playing a game. Or what about this? Imagine a toddler comes up to you and they tell you that they want to build the Lego Duplo house that they just got for Christmas. They're like, they're super duper pumped. Okay. Now, what if you simply give them the box and the instructions and tell them to go build it? When you check in on them in like a couple minutes or a little longer, are you going to find that house looking exactly like it's supposed to be built by the instructions? If you know toddlers, the answer is no. It's not going to happen. What they need, what the toddler needs, is someone more mature, someone older than them, to get down on the floor with them and to ask them questions like, oh, that piece that you got, what do you think comes next? How do you think those fit together? And, oh, let's look at this picture. How does this line up with what the picture is here? Is that the right color? Is that the right shape that you need? And through the relationship, they're actually guiding the toddler through the process of building this house. Now, understand, these kinds of pictures of equipping others also apply to our goal of equipping each generation to follow Jesus and become disciple makers. In many ways, and I have to recognize, our goal, and often the models that we've been taught and sometimes we've been raised on, is to tell somebody about Jesus and why a relationship with him, spending your life with him, is so amazing. And as soon as they welcome Jesus into their life, they trust him and they love him, we kind of leave them with an instruction book and walk away. It's like this. We hand them a Bible and say, read this. And in doing so, sometimes we can leave the impression that a life with Jesus is more like following a list of do's and don'ts and less about living in a daily, grace-filled, and loving relationship with Jesus. So here's a question. What if instead of throwing the book at them, so to speak, and walking away, what if we're there with them? And we're asking them what they've read and helping them process what they're reading through the Bible and applying what a loving and trusting relationship with Jesus looks like in the midst of their everyday life. Now, we're going to unpack that a little bit more in a couple minutes, but it's first important that we remind ourselves of the other critical component to equipping each generation to follow Jesus and become disciple makers. See, as a part of the series, we looked at 1 John 2, where John gives us markers of someone, and understand this is true regardless of how old you are, markers of someone who is a spiritual baby in their relationship with Jesus, somebody who's just entered into a relationship with him, or maybe someone who's a spiritual young adult or a parent, or even a spiritual grandparent who has generations of kids behind them that they've invested into. And a couple weeks ago, we handed out an insert with a quick summary and even a website that you can go to take a test online that can give you a little picture of like, hey, how's my life lining up with what this picture in 1 John 2 is about? And I would encourage you, if you haven't taken that test yet, please do so. I think it'll be an encouragement to you and it'll give you a little bit of a snapshot of like, hey, what's next? Where do I need to go? Also, if you have, we ask you this. If you'd be willing to mark down, they will give you a number kind of and how where you're at in the process. And if you'd be willing to share anonymously what your result is with us, and just write it down on that Connect card, that blue card, and turn that into the Welcome Center, what you're doing is it actually gives us a little bit of a snapshot as the leaders in the church are saying, hey, where are we really at as a church? And it gives us an opportunity to say, okay, what's next for us? If you're new and you haven't grabbed one of those sheets, there's actually it's a long sheet of paper out at the Welcome Center that you can get that has both the website as well as those different markers in it as well. So when we, as a church, take spiritual maturity, spiritual growth into account, it means that there will be times when you may be the same age as somebody else and you're actually discipling them depending on where they're at spiritually. And you invest into their lives and you equip them to follow Jesus and become a disciple maker. But understand it can also go like this. It might be someone who is physically younger than you investing into and equipping you as well. And that's actually a really good thing. That's actually a really, really good thing. Okay, let's circle back here to the main point. Equipping isn't simply giving information. It's the ongoing life-on-life coaching and application. Being a follower of Jesus and becoming a disciple maker is more than following instructions, like one might do in learning to play hockey or build a Lego house. See, following Jesus is really about what's in our hearts. Matthew 22:37-40 says this. Is Jesus is responding to a question about, like, hey, what's most important in a relationship with God? And he says this. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind. And this is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets, like everything coming up to this point. So, in other words, love, not information, is at the very core of a relationship with God and with others as well. And if that's true, if love is the point, then equipping in a classroom setting just isn't enough. It's not going to get us there. Now, this past week, I was listening to a podcast by a guy named Caesar on 123 Life School, and he was talking about the environments necessary for discipleship. And he very pointedly addressed this issue, and he said this: you will never have tests of love and wisdom in a classroom. Now, think about that for a second. How many classes have you been in that you've really been forced to love somebody else deeply? Now, I think of you know, my school days. I think of some of the youth here in the church, and it's like you get that group project, right? And you're like, oh, I got to work with so and so. Okay, they're a slacker. This isn't going to go well. I'm just going to do all the work, and it's going to work out in the end. Because you know what's most important is getting the grade. What I do. And realize you can actually get to a place you can work with somebody and never actually get to know them deeply and love them deeply. Classroom setting is not necessary. What about this? How about being encouraged to regularly apply godly wisdom to your life? You can hear about how to apply it, but where the test is when you're living everyday life. Do you know the truth of God, the wisdom of God, and then the challenge is, how do you live it? It's tested outside of the classroom. Now flip that, right? What about our relationships with our family? Have they forced you to love somebody else deeply? You know, I think of holidays out here, and sometimes they can be super stressful, or, you know, having a family with kids when they kind of start butting heads, and it's kind of like, how do you love somebody else when sometimes their personality is like, this is grating on you? And what it does, what God's doing, is saying, how do you love this other person well? Love's being tested. What does it mean to trust God and love well? Or as a parent, what does it mean to love sacrificially with younger kids? You know, we've got a toddler, and we've got a kid who's like 5 months old. There's a lot of sacrifice that goes into that. A lot of love that they're not going to be like, oh, thank you for changing my diaper. I wish that was the case, but it's not. So there's a lot of sacrificial love that goes into that. Or what about this? Like, in a family, how about using godly wisdom? You talk about what does it mean? What does life look like? And how do we wisely navigate the course that God has us on? See, equipping each generation means we need to become close enough with each other across physical generations and in spiritual generations, where we begin rubbing up against each other for us to grow as followers of Jesus and to become disciple makers, increasing in love and wisdom. Now, here's where we got to turn to the ultimate example, right? Jesus. And here's Jesus and his disciples. See, I've been struck by this recently. It's come up a couple of times even as I've been reading my Bible and digging into it. But think about this for a second. Jesus intentionally brought 12 guys together who, by all accounts, wouldn't want to share a meal with each other, much less spend 3 years of their life forging deep relationships and sharing the stuff of their life with each other. See, here's a snapshot of the disciples, right? You got the fishermen. A couple core guys, they work together, they're brothers, and they're a little rough around the edges. If you read the Bible and you hear about Peter, like, he's a pretty rough and tumble dude. And you got to think, like, they're around fish all day, so that's going to seep into their clothes, that's going to seep into their, they're going to smell a little fishy, right? Okay, so here's the core group of guys that smell like fish. Okay, then there's Matthew. He's a tax collector, by the way. And don't just think like IRS tax collector. Think like somebody who's been a total sellout to the Roman government. Or is like a sellout to the government. And by the way, part of being a tax collector means that you take extra money off the top to help support your life. So he's taking taxes and then he's taking extra taxes, which, you know what, we call a thief, right? So here's a guy. You got a guy who's a tax collector. You got the disciples who are fish guys. Oh, and then, by the way, you throw in Simon the Zealot. Here's a guy who is politically against everything that the Roman government stands for. You got a tax collector and you got a zealot. That's not going to go well. And yet, you look at this, and this is an explosion waiting to happen. And yet, Jesus brought them together, and through their relationships with him and through their relationships with each other, they learned how to love and look like Jesus. And their lives were changed as Jesus was at work in their hearts and their life. God was at work. And the end result is it actually changed how they loved others, and it helped God continue to share what does it mean to love others sacrificially and well when we get close enough. So in the same way, it's through the hard, it's through the messy, it's through the awkward, it's through even the painful relationships that God helps us lay down our life and even our very selves to give his love more deeply, but also to receive his love so deeply. We need both, which means we need those hard relationships in our life. Close and intimate relationships are the laboratory where God increases our capacity to receive his love and to love like he does. And as we equip each generation to follow Jesus and become disciple makers, here's the crazy part. God's going to be growing us as his disciples too. See, making disciples is part of our own discipleship journey. Okay. Now, we just talked a lot about the equipping each generation to follow Jesus, become disciple makers, but if we're honest, most of us, even those who grew up in the church, there's a lot of questions and fear when it comes, okay, here you're talking about this, where do I start? What do I do? Now, why? Here's why. Because many of us, we just haven't experienced this, right? We haven't experienced the kind of community, the kind of relationships that we're talking about here. We've been equipped with information, but we really haven't gotten into relationships where there's this ongoing life-on-life coaching and equipping that applies in every moment of life. Yet, the reality is if we're going to be equipped, then we have to grow in our ability to connect a relationship with Jesus to the million little things of everyday life in our life and to help others do the same as well. Here's the second really big point for us today. Equipping each generation means applying a relationship with Jesus to the million little things of everyday life. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean by this. In that same podcast I mentioned earlier, Caesar was sharing a story that had shaped his own discipleship journey and his own picture of what discipleship looks like. And so one night, he and his wife and their kids, they were hosting a couple of young adult women in their home. They're sharing a meal, and they were just kind of doing life together. And so after dinner, these women, they actually took it on themselves. They're going to wash up the dishes. They're going to clean it up. And as they were talking, one was just kind of like sharing her frustrations about life a little bit. There was some relationship stuff, some other stuff going on in her life. And so she's sharing what's happening in her life with the other person. With this other lady. And in a very casual way, the second woman looks at this other, her friend, and responds like this. That seems to be a bit of pride there, isn't it? Are you believing your God right now? And that you can control that person's thoughts, actions, motives, and you're upset that you can't? Now, Caesar, he shares, like, in that moment, he was, like, afraid that the woman's going to take a frying pan and go, whoop-boom! Which is about what you'd expect, right? But here's how this other woman responds, and it's a little bit mind-blowing. She says, yeah, you know what? That's exactly what I'm doing. Thanks for pointing that out. And the conversation just goes back to normal. And Peter's stunned. He later asked that second woman how she got away with that kind of conversation with her friend. And her reply was something like this. I'm just bringing Jesus into the situation. She was having a bit of a prideful heart. Now, see, what this woman did was to consider not only what the other woman was saying, not only the frustration she was sharing, but the motives that were happening in her heart. And so she was asking in her own heart what the other person, the other woman, was really believing about God in the moment. And as a result, the question she asked helped the other woman apply the truth of a relationship with Jesus to her frustration and helped the other woman see that what was going on was she wanted to be in control, trusting herself rather than trusting in God. Now, you look at that, you hear that, like, that's not normal, right? In fact, and here's the reality. To bring this kind of truth into somebody's life, we need to be, one, motivated by love. It's got to be out of love. And we have to be close enough in relationship where there is a known mutual love and trust for it to go well. And yet, and so when we bring Jesus into the conversation, they know it's really because it's out of love. And yet, the reality for us is we struggle to bring Jesus into the million little things of life because we've rarely seen it in action. We've rarely personally experienced it or rarely personally have these kinds of relationships. And so it's my hope as we kind of go through the rest of this time this morning, I want to give you some snapshots. I want to give you some stories and ways to apply this information that we're talking about. And many of these stories, these examples will be coming from my own life as God's been working in my heart and God's been working in faith in our hearts to draw us closer to him. And what it's done is it's actually expanded our picture of what discipleship means. And here, I could share a million little stories of these different things because I got to be honest, life with Jesus and disciple making, it's exciting. It's minute by minute. But because of our time, I want to narrow it down to just a couple. And so you know, because we're talking about relationships between different generations, and because of my role here, a lot of my examples are going to relate to how do we pursue, how do we love, how do we disciple youth and young adults, and where do we start? But understand that even though as I'm talking about that, this also applies to bringing Jesus into the million little things of life applies to your relationship with your spouse. It applies to your relationship with your kids. It applies to your relationships with your parents. It applies all over the place. So these are just a few examples. Okay. One of the beginning points, where do we start? It begins with us applying Jesus to the million little things of everyday life with intentionality about how we go through life. So, you know, we talk about relationships are vital, and they are when it comes to disciple making. So when Faith and I go shopping or to a restaurant, one of the big shifts for us has been to prioritize people over convenience or personal preference. Now, here's what this looks like. When I go out to fast food to meet with somebody, one of the first places I'm going to consider are going to be one of these three: Jimmy John's, Culver's, and Arby's. And you might go, like, why? I'm like, you know, do I love the food? They're like, maybe some places, some yes, some no. Here's why. Because two of our youth work at Culver's. And one of our young adults works at Jimmy John's and Arby's. And so I'm going to try to be intentional to talk with them while I'm there because I want to be in their life. I want to be in what's normal for them. And another example here would be when Faith and I go to Walmart's. And when we get ready to check out, one of the people we're looking for is Trisha. Or if I go to Super One, it's going to be Jeff and see if he's working on the floor. Or if I meet somebody at Brood Awakenings, I'm going to pop into the computer store next door and see if I can say hey to Evan. And you might be thinking, like, okay, where is Jesus in that? And here's where. We want to be intentional in being a regular part of somebody else's life, where they're beginning to taste in us and through us a community that loves and cares for others deeply, personally, and is ultimately looking to bring them closer to Jesus. Like, I want to be in their life. But here's the flip side. Another way that God has helped us be intentional is to be willing to consistently invite people over into our life, into our home. And what we're doing is not anything special. I mean, I'll be honest. We're just inviting people to come into our life and share what's normal for us, everyday life. And so it includes sharing a meal with us, sharing a dinner with us. And this includes, and I'll point out this is Faith especially, having people over while she's preparing food. Or in some cases, it's inviting a youth or young adult to go with her on a walk with her and the kids to the park. Or maybe it's just having a young adult join us on a shopping adventure. See, we want people in our life, and we want to be in others' lives where we can get close enough with each other to love each other well and lead them closer to Jesus. So as we're going through this process, we're building these relationships, we try hard to listen and ask questions and find out where they work, like Culver's. We find out where they're going to school. We find out about their interests and their families. And what happens is because Jesus is a regular part of everyday life, and we want to equip others to become disciple makers, Jesus comes up in the million little things of everyday life. And not just in ours, but in theirs as well. And again, this is a life God's grown us to learn to live as disciples. It's far from like, hey, look at Stephen Faith, what they're doing. It's a lot more, look at what God's doing in us and through us. So here's an example of as this relationship, as we're getting to know people. One night we had a young adult over. And we asked how work was going for him. And we'd gotten to know him a little bit at this time. And he was willing to share some of the things about work. And he shared they weren't going well. Like, he'd recently taken a job as a bouncer at a bar. And that as a part of his job, he was supposed to make sure that no drinks left the building. However, what he discovered was that his bosses were much more loose on enforcing it. So as a result, he's wrestling with what should I do? Do I quit? Do I talk with my boss? If I do that, am I going to lose my job? And as you imagine, there's a lot of things here we could talk about. If he quit, where would he get money? How would that, if he talked about it, how that would affect his relationship with his boss and his coworkers? So the big question is like, what's the right choice? What do we do here? It's messy. It's complicated. And understand, this is one of the million little things, or in this case, perhaps not so little, things of everyday life. And a relationship with Jesus had to come into it. And so as Faith and I are there, we're praying, we're listening to the Holy Spirit just inside, and we were intentional to ask things a little bit like this. What would honor God by your response? What would be most honoring in this moment? Or what does it mean to love your boss and love your coworkers well? What does that look like? What is loving towards them? Or, you know, let's talk about why it's hard to risk this job. Like, could God be trusted? And what would it look like to trust him if you got fired? Like, what does that look like? And bringing Jesus into the conversation, some of the perspectives started to shift. And as a result, he was able to surrender some of his fear to God, even if it meant hard things could happen as a result of what he did. And here was the end goal in the disciple-making process. It wasn't only to help him navigate the current situation, but it was opening a door to equip him to say, what does it mean to bring Jesus into the million little things of everyday life as he has conversations with others in the future and in his own life right now as well? Let me give you another example. This time, it's the journey of what can happen as you're intentional in getting close with somebody else's life, with the end goal of discipleship and disciple-making. See, as God was teaching us how to be intentional about bringing young adults into our everyday life with that discipleship aim, we started to spend more and more time with one of our young adults. And the more we became aware of her amazing strengths and some of her weaknesses, right? You get to see both. And so one of the things she openly shared with us was that she truly struggled to plan and make meals, right? So as we're hearing this, when her family would be out of town or when she was house-sitting or she was on her own for food, she'd sometimes fail to eat or even recognize she hadn't eaten until the day was over. And for us, it was like, ta-da! God showed us one of the ways that we could love and care for her. Simple stuff, food. And so by helping, we were actually aiming to help her grow in her ability to plan and create meals. And so we, and Faith in particular, because you don't really want me meal planning, it's not going to turn out super pretty. You'll eat, but it's not going to be great. Faith invited her over for dinner quite a few times for her to observe and begin to start taking part in the process of making food. And what happened is, the more that she was over, the more we started to get to know her, and the more that we started to get to know her, the more there were opportunities to bring Jesus into the million little things of her everyday life, and the deeper and deeper our conversations became. In fact, the process of meal prep actually became a laboratory for her discovering how meals can become an opportunity for community building and disciple making. Like, think about that. Meal prep became a vehicle for community building and disciple making, because she was seeing it in action. Discipleship conversation right over a meal. And over time, our relationship with this young adult got to the place where we were close enough that she thought of herself as our family, and we did too. And so what ended up happening is, as the more we're equipping, investing into her, she actually becomes a part of our discipleship journey, like I'm sharing this morning. And so we discovered that she was somebody who experienced love and care through words of affirmation. For me, however, and I gotta be pretty transparent here, words of affirmation for me don't come pretty naturally. They actually take a lot of work, which for me meant for me to care for her well, for me to love her well, I actually had to grow and adapt as a follower of Jesus in order to start caring for her and loving her more deeply. I had to make the adjustment to love her even better. And even though she's younger than I am physically, God used her to equip me as a disciple and a discipler. It actually shaped my relationship with God, and it shaped my relationship with others on how I love more deeply. And some of you may have guessed this already. Her name's Rachel Allen. And we've been blessed to be talking with her even regularly about the kinds of life that she's living right now, just doing everyday life with her as she's on the mission field in France. We're video chatting with her regularly. And so what's more, as she's growing and she's deepening in her own relationship with Jesus, she's actually encouraging us, challenging us, and helping us deepen our relationship with Jesus. Not just as someone, and here's the thing, it's not just us looking to disciple her, but she's also, as a friend, bringing Jesus into the million little things in our life too. It's part of getting close with somebody else. And I could go on to lots of other stories, but we need to close with this. If God is calling us to equip each generation to follow Jesus and become disciple makers, then where do we start? And if you're someone here who's not a millennial or in Gen Z, so you're not like young adult and down, here's just a couple of examples. Start by inviting your youth or young adult into your everyday life. Just normal stuff you do. Invite them to the park. If you got kids, invite them to go with you. Or go on a shopping trip. Or invite them to the family meal. Or maybe it's a Christmas or a New Year's meal. And here's the crazy part. What starts to happen? We actually had one of our young adults here. This happened with last year. Didn't have a place to go for Thanksgiving, and we weren't going to be around. And he connected with another family in the church. And what ended up happening is he got brought into the family. And he shared with us, like, dude, this is awesome to have this kind of relationship. I have somebody I can go to. And so what ended up happening is we talked later. We were trying to invite him over for another meal at our house. And he's like, no, actually, I'm going to hang out with his family. I want to hang out with the family. And I'm like, yes! Like, that's what we want. That's the kind of stuff we're looking for as we're talking about equipping each generation to follow Jesus and become disciple makers. It starts with those relationships. And it's simple. It just takes, and I've got to be honest, it takes a little bit of intentionality and a little bit of risk. So here's another place you could start. What about inviting a young adult or youth out to lunch after church? Or what about making desserts or maybe a meal for the young adults as they're hanging out here regularly on a Tuesday night? If you're older, be bold and take the first step. Be intentional about bringing them into your life and going into theirs. And if you're younger here, if you're one of those youth, young adults, you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait for somebody to come to you. You can go talk to them. And maybe it's like this. Hey, can we go out and just talk sometime? I'd like to get to know you a little bit. Can we just talk? If the older adult, they'll figure it out. Or maybe it's like this. Hey, you know, I see something in you. We're getting a little closer. Would you consider discipling me? Like, I want you to be intentional in my life. Would you be willing to do that? Don't wait. Because it's going to change your life. It's going to change their life. It's a part of us growing deeper in our relationship with Jesus and getting to love others well. So as we're doing that, as we're building relationships with others, keep the long-term goal of equipping each generation, physical generations and spiritual generations, in mind. Our end goal is to help everyone follow Jesus and become disciple makers. And so one of the things is start by practicing applying a relationship with Jesus to the million little things of life now as you're getting close to others. Both those who could help you learn how to do it well, it's part of your own discipleship journey, as well as getting close with others who can begin to help you know how to do it well. If you don't know where to start, find somebody who's doing it a little bit more naturally. Ask them to help you. It's a part of our journey of love, loving like Jesus does, like he's loved us. So here's the cool thing. This is what God wants, and he's going to help us through this journey. We're not going it alone. Just like, again, we started singing this morning, he is with us. His love does endure forever. So I want to invite the worship team to come back up again. They're going to close in a song. And what I would encourage you to do as they're playing, one, remember the awesomeness of who God is, how he loves us, how he cares for us, how he's with us in this journey. And he's not just saying, hey, go do it. He's with us. And we're designed to be with each other. Here's the next thing. Who is somebody that God's placed in your life that he might want you to build a relationship with? How can you invest? How can you love others deeply? And maybe it's saying, hey, God, you got somebody in my life right now, and they're not easy to love. Can you help me? Let's just take this time, turn to God, and know that he's with us, and it will be well.
We're going to sing one more song, so if you're able, please stand and join us.
Earth has quaked before, moved by the sound of his voice. Seas that are shaken and stirred can be calmed and broken by my regard. Through it all, through it all, my eyes are on you. Through it all, through it all, it is well. Through it all, through it all, my eyes are on you, and it is well with me. Be it from me to not believe, even when my eyes can't see, and this mountain that's in front of me will be thrown into the midst of the sea.